Hey there, I'm Tal Zlotnitsky from Ignite IT Consulting. You know me from the Braving Business podcast, but when I'm not behind the mic, I'm helping tech startups and established companies ignite their full potential. I also help entrepreneurs and businesses in distress reset for success. With over three decades of entrepreneurial success, I bring hands-on experience to drive growth, navigate turnarounds, raise capital, and lead through innovation. Whether it's executive coaching or strategic transformation, I'm here to turn your business challenges into success stories. Visit igniteitconsulting.com and let's spark that change together. That's igniteitconsulting.com. Your journey to business brilliance starts now.
And one last quick thing. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay on after the show to learn more about the Braving Business podcast and other great episodes for you to discover. And now, let's get the show started. Well, hello there.
What does that say on your shirt? Diabolical?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, diabolical pig, man.
Oh, diabolical pig.
Diabolical pig. Right. That's my competitive barbecue team. And then my name is DJ Saucy Loins.
I love that. I remember that, actually. I remember that. Are you noticing anything different about me, by the way?
No glasses.
That's, oh my gosh. You know what? So many people have been staring at me for the last couple of days since I've gotten contact lenses, and they're like, the hell is different
they
about
don't,
you?
They don't love you like Look I at love you. You. They don't that love you true. Like I love you. See
how that is true. Well, I appreciate that. I heard that your beloved got a new book deal. That's pretty cool.
She did. She signed with Hachette, one of the big five. Yeah. So
that's great.
She's got a book coming out in summer of 2026 called Kiss, Marry, Kill. So it's going to be it's a cozy rom-com mystery. Oh, it's going to be great. I'm sure we'll talk about it.
What number book is that?
40.
40. Wow.
40 published books.
That's pretty cool. I'm still working on number one. How about you, John? Have you written a book yet?
I've done a little bit in the fiction space as well. Back in the day. Back in the day. Nothing.
Back in the day. You look like you're 12. I mean, how back in the day could it be?
What are these comic books? Like, come on.
just some young adult fiction. In the day. Nothing too crazy.
That's PJ, awesome. Let's run with it. Let's introduce John Horn.
Absolutely. So today's hallowed guest is Mr. John Horn. He isn't just running advertisements, folks. He's building stories, he's solving puzzles, and he's helping businesses grow in one of the most fast-paced, ever-changing industries on earth, digital advertising. As the CEO of Stub Group, a premier Google partner agency that he helped build from the ground up, John has overseen thousands of ad campaigns for clients, both big and small. He's taught over 100,000 students through online courses and racked up millions of YouTube views by breaking down the complexities of Google Ads in a way that actually makes sense. But don't let the digital swagger fool you. John's story is one of humble beginnings, resilience through economic punches, like Hello Pandemic, and a deep love of his two young sons, his wife, and the Texas countryside they call home. From being Stub Group's first employee to navigating existential moments like COVID-19-induced client pauses, John's leadership has been built on transparency, speed, and values-first decision-making, and yes, lots of pacing around his office. John Horn, welcome to the Braving Business Podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
John, it's good to have you here. You have an interesting life story. Before Stub Group, you held jobs that are both blue collar and white collar. I'd love to maybe dig into the the blue collar side. What is something you learn on the non-corporate side of work that still shapes you today, your leadership and you as a person?
Yes, I had the privilege of starting working really in the workforce, really on the young side. So my dad worked at a warehouse, and he let me come and work with him at times. So from age 10, I was in a warehouse, not full-time at age 10, but full-time for months at a time, sometimes during the busier season, just out there packing boxes, putting things, you know, working alongside of adults in accomplishing the tasks there. And so from a very early age, I got to see, what is it like to have a job, you know, who does well, who doesn't do well, what are the patterns of, okay, this guy over here, he's slacking, interesting, I don't want to be like him. I want to be like this guy over here who's doing a really good job and getting recognition for that. And so that's a really good foundation, hands-on, you know, in the dirt and dust of a warehouse.
What kind of work was it? What kind of warehouse work was it?
So we're talking about basically retailers are selling, you know, books and CDs and toys and things like that. So basically you're out there, hey, racks and racks of products, and you know, I've got the order forms coming out, you're putting stuff in boxes, packing it up, getting on the shipping line, getting on the conveyor, getting it on the pallet for UPS.
And we have that in common, John. I don't know if you know that. My background is my original company that I founded with my family was a wholesale distributorship, which among other things distributed DVDs, CDs, licensed merchandise, magazines, books. And I did that work myself from a very similar age. In my, I think 12 or 13 was when I started working in dusty warehouses. So I concur. You learn a lot very quickly about what motivates people, what kind of people are likelier to move on to do bigger and better things and which are not.
And I
100%.
I have, you know, 30 something years in the whole logistics and shipping space. So I've spent most of my career in warehouses, and I got to say OSHA would probably not love a bunch of kids running around the warehouse, but I do say that it's very cool that you guys cut your teeth in the warehouse space. There's nothing like learning how that environment flows and how you can see how all the pieces come together. And, you know, you take all this disparate pieces and it creates something of a unit and it goes out. So that's kind of cool. Very, very neat. So we could see that kind of goes to your scrappiness, right? It allows you to see like how things all come together. But then you took that and you became your own first employee of Stub Group, and then later the CEO. So when you look back at the early days of you owning your own venture, what stands out the most for you? Like the scrappiness, or was it the chaos, or was it the hope of it all? Or like, was it all of the above that stood out?
Yeah. So my journey with Stub Group has been interesting in that I am not the actual founder of Stub Group myself. So when I say I'm the first employee, I am the first employee the founders brought on. So it was founded by two guys. One of them happens to be my brother, which is how I got into things to begin with, and then another long-term friend of his and mine. And so they started Stub Group back in, over a decade ago at this point, and brought me on and basically said, okay, we're gonna figure this out. We're going to figure out digital advertising. At that time, mostly Google Ads was the primary focus. And it's like, okay, so we don't really know what we're doing. We haven't done this before, but we're going to figure it out, and we're going to figure out how to sell our services to clients and how to actually grow a business. And so, yeah, like you said, there was a lot of chaos early on. And, you know, there were some very instrumental, large clients that we had where, you know, if we could keep this client, basically we could build a business kind of off the back of that revenue that would give us some leeway. And if we lost that business, we're going to have some difficulties. And so, you know, I remember being at my computer, you know, all day, every day, pretty much. You know, one client that was very kind of real time oriented. So we're pushing buttons like, oh, okay, this hour, how was their performance? And it wasn't so great. I got to decrease some bids here, and I got to increase these bids next hour, and just basically doing whatever it took to make those clients happy and successful and give us the financial leeway to actually build a sustainable business that could then, you know, last for the long term.
It's interesting because I think it's a common story, right? A lot of companies, when they get started, they have one or two, if they're lucky, two. So a lot of times just one very, very significant customer that represents a disproportionate share of the business and could singularly sink the business. And the amount of effort that goes into that customer and the amount of angst that is usually associated with that customer, they're, you know, it's 50-50, right? So PJ was asking about scrappiness, chaos, and hope. And it in the early goings of many businesses, and I wonder whether you can relate to this, you are constantly walking this tightrope between absolute petrification that something's going to go wrong and huge excitement about what could go right.
100%. There's, you know, that famous picture or meme, whatever, of the entrepreneurial journey, which is everything is amazing, everything is terrible. Oh, all, you know, roses, bed of roses, you know, now I'm in the depths of despair. And that's very true in that, you know, from day to day, especially in those early days as an entrepreneur, So much can go wrong. So much does go wrong. But then when things go right, there's also that incredible high of, hey, this is my business and it's working or being successful. We made this client, you know, a bunch of money and they're happy with us. And a lot of, I think, the entrepreneurial journey is trying to live with those extremes and not get too carried away with the joy, but also enjoy the joy and then not get too carried away in those depths of despair and knowing, hey, things are going to get better. And so trying to have that perspective and, you know, not jump off the deep end in the middle of it all.
So when you took over in 2019, so you come on, you help grow this, and now you put on the CEO hat, right? And that's a different role, right? Like a lot of times when you start off, you know, hey, I'm the CEO, but when you come into a company that's already been established and you help grow it, and now you have a lot and you wear that hat, there's a lot more expectations, there's a lot more pressures involved with that. Did that role match your expectations, or were there some oh crap moments, or as I like to say, oh shit moments, right out of the gate?
I was going to say, why are you being so polite, Peter?
It's a podcast. He looks like a nice guy. I don't want, like, you know.
You don't think John Cuss is? I don't know, John. I don't know. You know what? You do look kind of clean cut. I don't know.
I actually don't. But feel free to say anything you want.
DJ, well done. Reading the room. Okay. Carry on.
No, there are definitely plenty of those moments where, yeah, if I were a cussing man, I would definitely wanted to. I would say it was very daunting going into it. So I came, you know, I'd had some leadership roles already in the company. And I'd been there since day one. So I knew everything very well, understood how things worked, et cetera. But had not had that type of responsibility of, okay, now I'm setting the vision for the company. I'm making sure everything is happening the way it needs to be. I am in charge of sales, making sure we're growing. I'm in charge of execution, you know, HR, et cetera. And so, there were so many things that I did not know how to do or did not know that needed to be done. Often it's about what you don't know. It's about, okay, how do I hire people? What does that process look like? Or hey, you know, sales cures all. That is something that was kind of beat into me over time, in a good way by my mentors and the investors that I report to. Of look, we always have to be bringing business in, because if we get so focused on just what we have in front of us, which obviously requires focus and is good, but so many businesses, they focus just on serving their own customers and clients, and then they don't have a way to keep business coming in the pipeline. And they wake up and they say, oh, wait, our business is dying and it's too late. We haven't kept the pipeline filled. So that was one of the, I think, the big lessons I learned early on, is how important it is to keep your pipeline filled as a business and never ignore sales just because you're putting out fires from your own client base and on the execution side of things.
And, you know, and it's interesting because I think we're dealing with a very unique window of time, and it actually ties to my next question, because COVID hit and you guys suddenly faced clients that were in a panic and paused advertising and revenue started evaporating on you. And I'm talking to colleagues in the marketing world who are experiencing some of the same concerns over the tariff situation. And there are a lot of businesses, domestic and international, that really just are unsure how things are going or where things are going, and consequently, generally speaking, lack of certainty or lack of at least a sense of direction leads businesses to pause, and that, generally speaking, for businesses that depend on the motion of commerce, that's not great. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about what it was like to go through that minute, you know, that period of time. You were kind of, you know, again, you became CEO 2019, we're talking 2020. So, hey, welcome to the show, kid, right? Now you're CEO, now it's your problem to deal with. And maybe what are some lessons from that you think people who are dealing with the uncertainties now might be able to apply to their companies and their situations?
Yeah, so between 2020 and there's a day, I forget the exact date, but I know it was a Monday, I call it Bloody Monday, where a significant percentage of our clients all reach out basically and said, hey, we've got to pause advertising, stop advertising, because we're shut down as a business. We, you know, people can't come and actually execute business with us. And so we are staring at this, okay, right now, our our revenue as an agency, which is directly tied to the advertising that our clients are doing, is cratering. And like you said, there's this uncertainty of no one knows how long this is going to last for. You know, our business is going to be able to survive it, come back. No one really has any clue what's going on. And so we had to make some very significant decisions very quickly of how are we going to react to this and how are we going to, you know, from a cost perspective, what are we going to need to do to cut in terms of our expenses to actually stay alive ourselves as an agency? And so we had to have some tough conversations and say, look, we could try to wait this out and retain all of our team, which we would love to ideally. But if we make the wrong move here and we keep our expenses too high and obviously don't have the revenue coming in and this lasts for any amount of time, then we're going to go under as a business and all of our team members are going to lose their jobs. And we can't allow that as employers. And so we had to make some tough decisions of laying off some team members and saying, I hate that this is happening right now, but we have to make some decisions in order to protect the company and to protect the jobs of everyone who's working here. And so we had to cut costs very, very quickly and make some decisions. And some of the team members we were able to bring back after some of our clients, kind of got through those first early days and were able to resume advertising, which was great. But yeah, had to make some quick decisions. And gratefully, our agency was not as impacted as some agencies because we have a very diverse client base. So for some of our clients, it was actually an awesome time. We have clients in the e-commerce space and they had their best years ever because guess what? Everyone's buying online. Whereas some agencies that are more focused on, let's say, one vertical like travel or hospitality or gyms or things like that, they were completely crushed because 100% of their clients were in trouble. Sure. And so I think in terms of things that I learned from that experience and that also are very much impacting life right now with the tariff situation you described is diversification. Is we have a wide variety of clients we work with across many different industries, sizes, et cetera. And so when something goes wrong, like right now, it's kind of the reverse. Our e-commerce clients are having trouble because they're the ones who are being impacted by the tariffs. But we also have lots of lead gen clients, people in service industry who aren't impacted by it. And so we have a good diverse base to be able to say, hey, we're not going to go under as a company, even if some of our clients have to stop advertising because of what's going on with the tariff situation.
Okay.
And you know what's interesting? And we're not a political show, but what you heard there is why there's so much fear. Because the reality of the matter is, generally speaking, if you're a CEO and you're facing uncertainty, the first thing you need to do is you need to ensure that you survive. And survival oftentimes means cash preservation. And cash preservation is oftentimes about cutting headcount. So that's part of what the dynamic is that, you know, when you hear people talking about, well, what's the impact of this going to be, this uncertainty, oftentimes it's job loss. And obviously that tends to play out in lots of different ways. People who lose their jobs obviously spend less money. Even people who don't lose their jobs are afraid of losing their jobs, or they see their colleagues losing their jobs and they think, hey, you know what? That could be me next. I better be a little bit more cautious. And the next thing you know, the gears of commerce, if they don't come to a halt, they slow down considerably. So the reality, though, is if you're listening and you're an entrepreneur, the situation that we are facing out there requires you to be prudent. And, John took prudent steps and he's here. To tell about it, right? So at this juncture, survival has to be high on anyone's mind. And generally speaking, if you take any kind of different approach, such as being very optimistic and things will turn out okay, well, you're taking a bet. And if you build a business, taking a bet is, at some point, if you have a sustainable business, taking a bet is not necessarily the most prudent thing to do.
True. Also, though, another word that he had used was diversification. And in times like this, that is so key because you can't have all your eggs in one basket, especially, if we're talking about international things, especially when you're talking about tariffs, you can't have all your eggs in one basket. So the more diversified you are, the more spread out your supply chain is, whether it's domestically or internationally. And I'm just talking from the scope of dealing with international logistics for my entire career. I think that is something that would bode you well. You might have some great suppliers in one portion of the world or another, but the more diversified you are, the better you'll be able to withstand storms like this. So it's just Just a little thing. So when you were talking about being transparent with your team during that time, which is super important, especially during COVID, and COVID is such a, you know, a misnomer. It's a 100-year event, unfortunately, a terrible event that we all went through, obviously. But with transparency in particular, why do you think that a lot of leaders struggle with transparency, especially when news isn't good?
I think transparency is often correlated or associated with vulnerability, which is then associated with weakness. And so people think, if I say, hey, we're in trouble as a business, that's going to scare my employees. And that's going to make me look bad because I'm responsible for my business. And if I'm saying, hey, there's problems with it, well, then that means there's problems with me. I haven't prepared for it well or whatever. And obviously, you do need to be strategic in how you communicate with team members. There are going to be some things where, you know, people need to be aware of information up to a certain point, but there's going to be things that, you know, you as the business owner have to take care of and aren't going to burden with your team. That's your job as the employer. But especially, I think, when you're going through something like COVID, it's so incredibly important that you just tell people, look, here's where we're at. Here's what we're seeing. Here's where things could go if X, Y, and Z happens. And here are the actions that we're taking to prevent that. And hey, if you have any input, ideas, recommendations, I'd love to hear that as well, because this is unprecedented. And the more minds that we have, perspectives and brains we can bring to bear, the better. And so, yeah, I think, again, it's that concern about appearing weak to your team. And at the end of the day, I don't think, you know, if you handle transparency the right way, if you are strategic in how you communicate, but honest and open with your team, then I believe that that's actually a strength and the exact opposite of weakness. And your team will appreciate that. They will respect that. They will respect you as a leader more. And have a better feeling about who is at the helm and who is, you know, ultimately in charge of their jobs and their ability to put bread on the table for their families.
Yeah, I think, John, it's such an important point you're making, because I do think that, generally speaking, there is an association with weakness, particularly if the news is bad. And I think that comes from an old school and, I think, frankly, by and large, discredited theory of what leadership is. It's not about, you know, it's not about being the strongest or, you know, the impossible to bring down, right? The whole old school, frankly, hyper-masculine version of leadership. Leadership is about inspiration. Inspiration comes from authenticity, and authenticity requires transparency. And it's not an easy, particularly if you're young, and you still seem very young to me. I don't want to ask how old you are. You're welcome to say that, but you look young. So you are a young CEO, right? It's 2020. You are just a year into the job. So you were young, both in terms of your experience as CEO and by your age. I would imagine that if you had taken any other approach but being transparent, you would have lost all credibility with your team. Tell me your thoughts about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of to your point about what does leadership look like and how has that changed over time too in terms of how people look at it. The way I approach it with my team is not, hey, I'm at the top here and I'm just telling, you know, barking out orders, here's what's going to happen, et cetera, go forth and conquer. In many ways, I have more bosses than anyone else in the company. And I'll nuance what I mean by that. But I am constantly looking at it as, how can I support each team member? How can I give them what they need to be successful? How can I make sure I'm responding to them quickly so they feel respected, heard, they've got the ammunition they need to be able to then go and do their job successfully? And at the same time, what I don't mean by that is abrogating my responsibility and saying, okay, well, they're going to tell me what's going to happen and I'm just kind of reacting to them. So there's this balance of, look, I need to be there. I need to be reacting to what their needs are. But then I also need to make sure they understand that there is a vision, that we're driving towards a particular place, a particular destination. And if they kind of wander off the path a little bit, I need to communicate to them clearly, here's why we're doing things this way. And here's why we're trying to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. And then again, looking for that feedback. And it should be a conversation with your team members. It's not just me saying, go forth and do this, but me saying, hey, here's where we need to get. what's your feedback and input on how to get there? And then some of that's going to be good and helpful feedback that I can incorporate into things. Some of it's not. And that's my job, is to filter those things and allow those things to then impact where I'm taking the company. But yeah, if I just went to them and said, hey, things are great, don't worry about it, during that COVID situation, or if I just didn't talk at all, you know, kind of turtled up and be like, yeah, I'll get back to you. Yeah. You know, we're figuring things out or whatever. That would have created some significant issues. So it was very much.
I mean, it's been 5 years since COVID, and we're now dealing with what we're dealing with. Are you finding now a time where you feel that you should be communicating maybe a bit more than normal to your employees?
It's interesting right now in that most of our clients are not yet seeing much of an impact. So right now we're in kind of the questioning mode of, we're talking with our clients and saying, how is this impacting you? So for example, I was talking to a client yesterday and they're like, yeah, we have no idea what's going on. Like we can't really make any plans right now because things are changing every day. But we know we have a shipment coming in from China and we're going to be good for the rest of our year. We're going to have enough product. And so we're basically just going to, you know, wait and see what happens. And this might actually be really good for us because our competitors who move product more quickly, they might, you know, have to stop immediately because they're not stocked up for the rest of the year. And so, yeah, right now the conversations I'm having with our team are, talk to your clients, find out what's going on, and let's figure out what the situation is. And I don't think it's going to be nearly as dire as COVID was from what I've seen so far. Again, partly because of our diversification as an agency. So some of our clients are certainly going to be impacted, but the majority of our clients will be okay from what I can see. And so it's not the same. Yeah, the same kind of level of despair as COVID. Mm-hmm.
I would hope not. My gosh. Well, you know, you've talked about diversification, or we've talked about diversification. You've said that one of the best parts about your job is working across so many industries. What is a business model or a client that you've worked with that actually surprised you? It surprised you in a good way?
That is a fantastic question, because I'll often say I feel like every couple of days I learn about a new industry I didn't know existed, new way to make money that I didn't know was possible until they came to us. So, man, there's so many different things. We had a client who was making a killing from selling letters from Santa. So parents would just, you know, say, hey, we want to buy a letter from Santa. And they'd send out this letter from Santa from the North Pole that was really cool, put under the Christmas tree, stuff like that. We have a client who helps people negotiate to get their security deposits back from landlords. So if your landlord's holding on to your money and they shouldn't be, these guys will come in and fight for you. And there's so many other examples that come to mind. It's a lot of fun in not being niche into one area, because we get to be very creative and also see, hey, this strategy is working for this client. How can we maybe take a version of that for this client over here? It's in a completely different industry. And make that work for them as well. And so it's kind of, you know, seeing what can we learn across these different industries, what applies, what doesn't apply. And it just means no day is boring, because I could go from, you know, talking to a local company trying to fix air conditioners to a multinational corporation selling transformers to Tesla to, you know, fill in the blank. To clarify, when I say Tesla, Tesla's not a client of ours, but we do have clients who service them. So just sure. Just wanted to be clear there.
I find it interesting. I mean, I've seen you on YouTube. You've taught digital advertising to well over 100,000 people. You've had millions of YouTube views. What is it you think about you that resonates so much, particularly in an industry that's pretty jargon based? You're not. I mean, if I've watched you, you're very straight shooter. What do you think? Why do you think that resonates so much?
I come from a data background, so I'm pretty cut and dry, I think, in the way that I think about things. And I certainly try to, you know, be strategic in how I message about things and the videos I create, the conversations we have with clients. But ultimately, it's like, look, is this working? Is it not? Do we have a path forward? Is it not? What are steps to get there? And so I just try to speak in that way when I'm communicating with people and when I'm making videos, and say, look, this is what's working. This is what's not working. This is the logical progression of thoughts. And this is what I spend my life doing. You know, I've been working for a long time in the very nitty gritty weeds of advertising, of Google Ads and things like that. And so it's just, it's fun to share that with people, honestly, and be like, yeah, you're going to waste money if you do this, because I've done it 5 times and I always wasted money. Or, hey, you know, this is a stupid idea, but hey, this thing over here makes sense. And Google says not to do it because it's not a best practice, but actually it's going to make you money. So, you know, let's try it. Let's try doing this.
I think it's so cool. And also, just as a side note, and I, you know, I'm sure you've listened to all 4 seasons of the Braving Business podcast. So you already know this already. Yeah. Thank you very much. So you already know that I have a degree.
He's in advertising. Josh. Yes. I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know.
Carry on.
But you know, but I'm sure you know that, you know, I have a degree in advertising from the Ivy League of the Great Lakes at Marquette University. I actually have a BS in advertising, back when they actually gave Bachelor of Sciences for those. Where I was going with this was that the misnomer that I think is out there is that when things get tough, a lot of clients tend to not want to spend on advertising, and they see advertising as something frivolous. They same thing with sales. They look at their sales teams as soon as things get tough, they're like, oh, we got to cut out sales. We got to cut advertising, as that is somehow the fluff of the organization. And I've never understood that coming from the sales side of things. So I just think that when things get tough, and now that I'm a business owner, obviously, and I've been a business owner throughout my career, I would just like to say, I've always looked at it a little bit differently. When things get tough is when you really do need to make sure that your name is out there, because you have to keep the engine going. You have to keep that drive going. Otherwise you will dissipate. And so you got to keep the foot on the gas. And so we were talking about tough times. We're talking about, you know, budgets being cut through advertising. So I just want to put that out there.
Yes, I've seen this time and again. You're 100% right. Of business, they look at their P&L, and where it's kind of the first place they look is sales and advertising. And I can understand to a certain extent, because you're looking at, okay, well, you know, cost of goods sold, I mean, we have to have products to sell, or hey, we've got our team members, we don't want to fire our team members, they're doing work for our clients. So, you know, where is the other often largest amount of money, where it's like, is this really doing what it needs to be? We, you know, we're spending so much money on this, we need money, let's cut this. And it's very short-sighted, like you said, because again, sales cures all. And when you cut off that marketing and that sales that's bringing that vital, fresh, new blood into the business, then you're just gonna start going down, because you know there's always churn, there's always realities, and you're not getting your pipeline, you're not creating your awareness as a business to keep things, you know, coming in the door. And yeah, it's sad to see, but it's also an opportunity for the smart businesses out there, because often in a downturn, the ones who keep going, the ones who say we're gonna keep working through the pain, we're going to keep spending money on advertising and sales, they capture a lot of market share because they were there when people were looking. And so downturns for some businesses are a fantastic time to actually build and grow their business, while other competitors are scared and are pulling money back away from sales and marketing.
So I think part of the issue is not knowing what works, right? And Google Ads, and you do a ton of work with Google, it changes constantly. I mean, there's no like simple formula. Just follow this formula exactly this way, you'll get the results, right? You really need to be on your toes. So first, actually, my question is more personal. How do you avoid burnout, or frankly, losing your mind with the fact that you may have a strategy and it works, and then Google changes something and now you got to go back to the drawing board?
Yeah, it can be frustrating when you look at things and you say, this could work, this used to work, and now it ain't working. And what do we do now? But it's also, I mean, it sounds trite to say, but it keeps things interesting. Like I like solving puzzles. I like figuring out solutions. And one of the benefits from the agency side of things of the platforms constantly changing is that we get to spend all of our time figuring those things out. And then our competitors, or even just, you know, advertisers themselves who don't have the time or interest in figuring those things out, they fall behind. They're not on the cutting edge. And so they need help from someone like us who is willing to invest the time and energy and resources into figuring it out. So yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's both frustrating as well as fun. And also, we always have to keep in mind that what even works for one client, even this, like this strategy, may be working for this client and not working for that client. And they might be in the same industry, and yet over here it's working, over here it's not working. And often that has to do with just the business itself, how it operates and what its reputation is like. And so that's one really important thing that we have to talk about with our clients, when they'll be like, hey, my friend Joe is doing X, Y, and Z, and just do X, Y, and Z for me, and we'll see the same results. And we'll have to say, well, your friend Joe also has, you know, 500 positive reviews on Google, and he's calling back his leads within, you know, 5 minutes and coming in. And so, hey, let's work on these things that aren't just advertising, but they're actually business related to get you to where Joe is, because we're not going to get you the results Joe is getting until you also get your business to that same level.
Very nice. Very nice.
I'm curious. I want to ask you, it's a little segue question, but it's, you know, we are seeing a new era, right? Generative AI, ChatGPT, et cetera, has to be impacting the efficacy and frankly, the eyeballs on Google Ads. How are you thinking about the world that's coming when you're thinking about both your business and your customer's business?
Yeah, there's really two things we're focused on. One is, how can we leverage AI to do a better job ourselves? And then how is AI changing search behavior and what people actually see when they go out in the world to find information? So on our end, it's exciting because there are so many ways to make ourselves more efficient, to streamline things, get things done faster, iterate faster. And so we're working on trying to implement those things and say, okay, how can we make our output better and do more with less using AI? But I would say the more existential question, especially for anybody in the search game like us, of how do people search for information, is to what extent is AI, things like ChatGPT, are they going to replace search engines like Google, or really Google's the only search engine that matters these days? And are people going to replace Google with these LLMs? What we're seeing so far is still a very small percentage of the searches that people do across the world, across the nation, are through LLMs like ChatGPT. We're not seeing any massive decrease in traffic currently for Google. But what we are seeing is a very significant growth curve, obviously, for those LLMs. And if they continue growing with the trajectory that they have right now, they will quickly start eating into that search share that Google has. And so we're very much thinking through and looking for things that our clients for, okay, well, how do we make sure that we're showing up in those LLMs? Because at the end of the day, people still need to find information. They still need to find sources. They need to go purchase products and services from somewhere. And it's just the platform of who comes up, who captures that source area. And so we're thinking through and exploring, okay, how do we make sure that our clients are there so that whether someone's going through ChatGPT or Google or whatever it is, we can be platform agnostic and just view it as we are connecting our customer with their customers and driving those dollars.
Very neat. All right. So let's get away from the internet and all the fun stuff. Let's talk about reality. You're the dad of two young strapping boys. I guess, I don't even know, but two young boys, and you make time to hike around Texas. So what do your kids think what you actually do for your living, and are they right?
So my oldest is three, my youngest is two, and then we actually have a third on the way coming June. So not here yet, but looking forward to it. And so I think what do they think I do? Every now and then I get to go drive into town and work from a coffee shop. I don't have too many meetings or something. And so they kind of associate, oh, dad's going to the coffee shop. And so they love hanging out at the coffee shop as well at times when we'll go into town and be like, oh, yeah, dad works here. So they might think I'm a barista. I'm not really sure. But they do love, we've got some toy computers and phones, and they will, like, my youngest was in my office earlier today, and he's got this old broken laptop open, and he's got his little wooden phone next to it, and he's, you know, chattering away and talking to some client on there. So it's fun to watch that.
That's great. Just watch out for him to fire. You know, if he's beginning to fire people, that's, you know, you might need to tone that back a little bit. You said in the pre-interview that your go-to quote is, "In all things counted, all joy." And I'd like to understand what that means and what does it mean to you, particularly in the face of stress and, you know, pivots and this journey called life.
Yes, and all things counted, all joy. So that comes from the Bible, which is a guiding book for me. And ultimately, it's this idea of, look, when we're going through life, there are always going to be problems. There are going to be challenges, bad days, and we need to expect that. And we need to find the good things in those days and count those days as joy as much as we do the actual joyful days when you have a child born, or you have, you know, a fantastic business deal goes through or whatever. And so trying to find the joy regardless of the situation that you're in, I think is really important in just centering me personally and giving me perspective and saying, yeah, today sucked. Like, today was terrible, but I still have so many blessings. I have, again, a wonderful family. I have this great job I get to do. I've got great people I get to work with. And yeah, this situation is really frustrating. I'm got to figure out how to deal with it, et cetera. But tomorrow will be a new day. And let me just take joy in what I've got, the blessings I have, and take strength from that.
Very neat. What if I find joy in swearing? Does that help?
No? Well, you know, you can find joy in many places. So to each his own.
So cathartic. All right. Real last question then. So we understand that you pace a lot while you work, which could be a little disconcerting at the old coffee shop, but I guess we'll get into that. So if you wore a pedometer, what is your bet of the number of steps that you would do during a stub group strategy session?
Ooh, man, I do pace a lot. I'm weird, and I literally walk around with my laptop in my hands. And I have a standing desk, so I'll do a little route, and then if I need to type something real quick, I might, you know, set it down on my desk, type something, and then just pick it up and keep going. And yeah, I mean I probably walk thousands of steps a day, just traipsing around the house, tracing around the office. It's I think better when I'm walking, and so yeah, I don't know where it comes from, but I enjoy it.
I always find fun. I like many people now, I wear an Apple Watch, and well, today I haven't done very much yet. I'm still going to the gym. But yet, even today though, I have not done much. I feel like I've not gotten up from my desk. It's been that kind of a day. I've still walked 2 miles. I don't know how the heck I've done that.
Yeah.
That's impressive. But I have. And a typical day is more like 4. I don't know. Do you track how many miles you pace in a day?
I don't. I really should. I don't have any. Yeah. I don't have an Apple Watch or Fitbit or something. But that was
kind of fun. It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, if I'm on the phone, I will walk. Like, I will pace around. Just, I think that it helps me keep. I don't know. It just helps me think better. It does. I've always been like that. If I'm on the phone, especially if it's like something important, I have to stand up. Like, I'm always up. I can't just sit and talk. I don't know why.
Same here. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but something about that physical movement gets, I think, the brain's moving.
A little blood flow. Who knows?
Yep. Who knows? Well, our guest today was John Horn, the CEO of Stub Group, and also someone who has taught ad campaigns and online courses to over 100,000 students. He has millions of people who watched his YouTube videos, and he's got a cool story and a cool company. John, it's been a real pleasure to have you on with us. Continued success to you, and best of luck to you and your wife in June with the coming of number 3. Do you know if it's a girl or a boy yet?
We don't. We like waiting to find out. So we shall see.
Do you know what you wish for? Is just you're going to say just a healthy one, I'm sure, right?
Healthy one for sure. I'm like 75% sure boy, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any good names?
Oh yeah. Got them both picked out. So we will see. One we're going to honor, if it's a boy, we're going to name after a family member. So excited to share that with them when that happens.
Oh,
very cool. Very cool. Well, congratulations, all the best, and continued success.
Thanks so much.
And that's a wrap, folks. Like what you heard, want to support the show? Please follow our page on LinkedIn and Facebook, visit us on YouTube, and please like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast streaming services. You can also see exclusive content, subscribe for free to our weekly blog, support our sponsors, and soon buy our merchandise at www.bravingbusiness.com. Thanks for being a part of our production, and we'll see you next time on the Braving Business Podcast.